Welcome to News Burp, the show that trawls the internet for news and burps its essence in your general direction. My name is Matt and I'm dropping shit all over the place. And him over there is Adam.
I am picking stuff up like a pen.
And this is episode number 257. And today we've got stories about Italians getting pissed off over a vending machine pizza. Chernobyl alcohol is a thing I bet you didn't know about. And a man who was almost a real life Incredible Hulk.
Jeez, and I have head transplants and proof of time travel. From a TikToker.
Of time travel from a TikToker. Well, look, I've had an interesting week.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because I think if you remember last week, yourself, Adam, and dear listeners, is that last week I tried to convince you that by the year 2030, aliens will have made a big public, we're here.
Yes.
Right. And you said you wouldn't take the bet that it would come true because the sun shines in the dog's arse every now and again, apparently. I think it's the exact words you said.
Yeah.
And that, you know, because I maintain that everything that I've said or will say will come true.
Yeah. I didn't say it at the time, but in my head I compared it to if you've an infinite amount of monkeys on an infinite amount of typewriters, they will eventually type everything that Shakespeare has ever written.
Yeah. However, I'm working, you know, that's 1,000 monkeys, which means that my mind is running at the rate of 1,000 monkeys.
No, I'm an infinite amount of monkeys. An infinite amount.
Even better. He just built me up even more.
Yeah.
My mind is running at the same speed of infinite monkeys.
Yes, it is, son.
So I've maintained it because I said I invented wireless electricity, which they have. They just haven't figured out a way to make it, you know, mass producible.
Yeah.
Right. But wireless electricity is a thing which I invented. Recycling is a concept that came from my brain. Yeah. Because years ago I was like, why can't they just recycle everything? And now they can pretty much recycle everything. Right.
Okay.
Also, when I was a kid and CFCs and the ozone was a problem, I was like, just get rid of CFCs. They did it. Right. So I fixed the ozone layer as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I got a message from another one of our listeners and dear friends, Killian.
Oh, yeah.
Who was listening to an episode of Table for Two, which is over on the newsburp.com, is our hospitality ranty podcast given out about people in, you know, customers and stuff.
Yeah.
So apparently he was listening to it. I'll play the message, right, because it's an audio message.
Okay, cool.
All right. We were, by the way, contemplating just sending you the message and then asking you a way to figure out of getting it off the phone and onto the show. And we just thought you'd have a freak out and it'd be hilarious, but I decided not to do that to you.
I could have done it.
I know. But we were kind of hoping something would go wrong and you'd be all stressed out.
Of course, Killian would love it. I suppose Killian doesn't want me to do it now. Tell him I want it on the show. I want it as clear as day on the show. Yeah. I can't do it now. Do it, Adam. Do it. The dynamic between myself and Killian is Killian says something much like Matt would say, I have an idea, and I kind of go, okay, and Killian is a bit more abrupt, kind of going, Adam, do it, and I just kind of go, okay.
Yeah. Do you know what your problem is? You're just an enabler for everybody.
I just want to make people happy. I want to be appreciated and loved. Love me.
Well, excuse me. So I'll just play the message. Okay, here we go.
Hello, mate. I'm in the car. I'm driving. And I'm listening to all the podcasts. But I'm going through the Table for Two. And I'm on the fourth episode of Table for Two. And you have described a guy who has just left the table to go for a smoke, leaving two elderly people who you have nicknamed Smokey and the Stroke. Strokey and the Smoke or something like that. And you have said you're looking at them and you're going to sort of make a makeshift script about them, crime solving elderly couple. And I'm like, that's the Thursday Murder Club. That's the premise for the whole Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman. So where you say you came up with like Happy Out, all these things, you thought of the Thursday Murder Club before Richard Osman. You thought of crime-solving pensioners. So I just wanted to tell you that. There you go. Bye.
So, further proof that I... Hang on, still you're fucking still talking. Playing.
Shut him up.
Okay, so, further proof that I'm this future-predicting genius, infinite monkey mind having fucking phenomenon.
Yeah, the sad thing is that, like, I have that book, and that book sold out. Didn't sell out, but it went to, like, top of the readers list pretty quickly. So I guess your issue is coming up with all these great ideas and then going, you know.
Oh, see, the problem is that I'm just the ideas man.
you got to be the more active man. Because
I'm really not, because I don't, because it's like that, because I don't have the interest. I'm like one of these people who's like, you know what they should do, and then I blurt out some genius, and then they go do it, and the world is a better place.
I just think when they just stick with the whole Thursday Murder Club, you went, imagine those two old people just like, you know, they solve crimes, and Richard Osman just walks by and goes, that is a fun idea, just becomes a millionaire. You're on GTA looking after all your businesses and your basements, and I come in with the book going, look at that, eh? Person who wrote that was a millionaire. They're going, yeah, I need a hanger to sell my stuff abroad. Write a book.
I don't have the attention span like a human goldfish, because it is like that. It's like, I've got a great idea, and all I have to do is just sit down and make it happen. And I'm like, oh. But the idea is the important bit.
Look, it's...
If you don't have the idea, you can't make the idea happen. You know?
Yeah, but you know, we just explained that I am a type of person that will go, what's that idea, man? Okay, we're doing that. And, okay, what you have to do is then share your ideas in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I need a team of like, I need like an actual team of paid doers. You know what I mean? Like, I just need to be able to like walk into like a boardroom and go, right, here we go. This is what we're doing. From now on, giraffes have to be telepathic, and then just people just have to go ahead and make giraffes telepathic. By the way.
It sounds like you're a 6-year-old CEO. When I take a crayon out, I want it to taste like that colour. So red is strawberry, orange is orange, green is apple. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Okay, good job, peeps. Good job. Now I want bop. I need me some bop.
Yeah. Look. I'm just the ideas, man. Look, my brain is my brain... My brain needs to be slowed down sometimes, you know. My brain is running at a speed that with the world just can't keep up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, look, I hear you, man.
Like, in a different generation, like, say, I don't know, say 50 years ago, I would have been the guy in a cocktail bar going, you know what would look really good in that is little tiny umbrellas. And then years later, they come out with little tiny cocktail umbrellas, and I go, see? World's a better place for it.
I think you're the guy when they're building the pyramids said, God, you have to carry all these. If only we could like roll them or something. What's roll mean? Oh, it's like, you know, you just kind of push it. What do you mean push? Just put it on your back. It's really heavy and really hard. Oh. And then off goes Malcolm and events. Look at that. What's that? I call it the wheel. The wheel? Why is that? Because when you push it, you go, wheelie cool. You go, really? Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Wow, that's amazing. Oh, I go back to GTA.
Do you know what it is? Well, like, did you ever do like group projects in school or college? And like, it's a creative task. So it's like, you know, the problem is this, and you've got these pieces of equipment and these resources at your disposal. At your disposal. So go ahead and like figure out the problem. I'm the one who would sit back. Not, I am lazy, but we'll get to that in a second. I'm the one who will sit back and like see what everybody else is doing, watch it not work, and then come in and go, what about this? And then I'm hailed as the genius, right? Now, I'm a very valuable person to have around because I'm also lazy, right? A lazy person will spend more time figuring out how to make something lazy than to actually just go ahead and do it.
Yeah. See, I used to do the same. And what used to annoy me in school was I'd have a million ways of doing things and just... constantly chopping them off. No, that won't work. 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 And so, yeah. You know, they'd see me sitting there, and I'd probably write a few things, kind of going, okay, that might or that might. And go, come on, Adam, get involved, get involved. And it's like, I am. And as I'm going through the list, I'm watching them, you know, scratch off my list for me. Yeah. You know, kind of, what if we put in water? What if we put in water? It's like, okay, can't put in water because that won't work. Okay, yeah, grand. And so I'm four steps ahead of them, and they're still going, put in your mouth, put it in your mouth. And it's like, oh, geez, you can't, you're not letting it. Like, until eventually I worked out the answer and kind of going, geez, Adam, you tried it in your first shot. No, in my head, instead of just like grabbing things and going, put them up your bum, quick.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Come on, peeps.
Yeah, like, look, the best person to have on the team is somebody lazy, because they're critical thinkers. You know what I mean? It's like, how can I make this shit not so tedious? How can I get the shit over and done with quick?
Yeah.
Right. So like, I'm trying to think of an example, because like, there's loads of them. There's absolutely loads of them. But it's like, oh yeah, okay. So years ago, I was writing something, and I said to myself, "This is how lazy I am." Right? When I went to school, I was in school, and I had a choice of typing class or woodwork class. I took typing because I figured people talk about being able to type 60 words a minute. I can't write 60 words a minute, but if I learn to type, I can knock that shit out of the park. So I learned to type. Now I can't do 60 words a minute. I can probably do about 30, 35. But for somebody who doesn't type every day, that's pretty good going.
That's pretty good.
Because I don't need to look at the keyboard in order to do it.
Yeah, I still do.
So I just bang away. So there's no problem. Then typing became too much for me. And I figured, what if I could just talk at the screen? What if I could just talk? And somebody said, why not a dictaphone? No, because then I have to fucking transcribe that shit. So what if I could just talk at the laptop and the words appeared, and, you know, lo and behold, the fucking text-to-speech is now a thing.
Yeah.
Man, the world doesn't realise how valuable I am to it.
I think it's just, some people are just quicker off their chair to kind of go, when you said, what if I could just, you know, talk to the screen and it all just happened? The guy beside you got up off his chair and went, how do I do that?
Yes, exactly. So all I need to do is find an employer who's going to hire me to just sit there and give them ideas. I'm not even a greedy person. I don't need like rights to the patents. I don't need royalty payments. I don't need licensing fees. I just give me, you know, just a decent salary. I'm not greedy. I like the life that I have going on here, where I don't have to do shit for it. If all I have to do is talk and give ideas, and then go back to me GTA businesses, forget about it.
I think so. What your office is basically, all you need is like a whiteboard. No, actually, no. You need to do that kind of dictaphone thing, mm-hmm. But it's just constantly on, and people are able to just like rewind and listen to it. So when you get an idea, you just go, Pegasus is a flying horse. Yeah, make that happen, and people listen to that and go, flying horses, and they go away, and then you're going to go, Back to Future 2 is cool. Flying cars. So they're just kind of going, okay, he's on a flying theme. Let's just make everything fly. He wants everything just like to be travel. But you're going to, he's going to come up, he's going to say, like, teleporter. Why are we flying? Why can't we just get from A to B really quickly? Like teleportation, Matt? Shh, I'm thinking.
But it's also like
teleportation.
It's the constant refusal to get on board early from like everybody, because like I'll say something like flying cars and they'll go, that's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. We all said it about CFCs and about recycling and wireless electricity and fucking everything else that I've predicted, and whatever that murder show that Killian said.
It's a book.
Okay, so that, whatever. See, look, I don't even care what happens to my idea afterwards. Just pay me for my ideas.
It's a book. Books. It's like Wikipedia, except on paper. Paper. Good, Matt. Let's go.
Like, there was one day, and I think I might have actually would have been Killian. Somebody else anyway talking about music, and so I was like, you know what? Somebody should just do a musical without music, and they went, play. And I went, see.
Ha 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 ha.
Suppose we should do some news headlines, some weekly weird updates.
Okay. I'm sure Killian enjoyed that.
I know I did.
Here we go. News.
That's it. That's all we need.
Italians are pizza snobs.
What? Well, yeah. Well, they're kind of they're Italian food snobs.
Yeah, they are. Now, this story here, I'm gonna jump straight into. Right, is that pizza vending machines have turned up in Italy, and Italians are not happy. Because they don't like the concept of, you know, something simple, but also as, you know, as elegant as a pizza just being turfed out of a vending machine. Like all these food vending machines are massive in Asia. They're massive in Tokyo. They're massive in Korea and Taiwan, all these kinds of places. Like, and there's whole vending machine cafes.
Yeah.
Where it's like it's just a room and it's like it's wall to wall vending machines, but then when you get your food you can sit down at the same space and eat it and then put it in the bin and then away you go.
Nice.
And they do everything from burgers to sandwiches and everything else, but some of the vending machine cafes, it's actual staff behind the machines making everything, and that's how the machines are refilled.
Right.
So it's not like the sandwich has been sat there for 12 hours and you eventually get it. Yeah. It's congealed and horrible. Like, it is, you know, at breakfast time they serve breakfast stuff and then it moves on to lunchtime. It means that they have no staff or cleanup costs to worry about.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Italians are not happy about this with pizzas.
Can I ask, is it the same situation with the pizzas? Is someone behind making them, or is it like a slice in a kind of like a heater oven and just dished out?
Yeah, it looks like for all intents and purposes, a microwaved pizza just heated up and spat out at somebody. You know. Now, I understand why Italians would get upset over that, because it's like every true Guinness lover in Ireland having to drink a can of Guinness at home. It's like, yeah, I mean, technically it's the same thing, but also eat a bag of dicks.
Well, like some pizzerias in Italy would say, you know, this is the best margherita you can get, or this is our version of the margherita, you know. And just across the road, they use a different oil, or more garlic, or less garlic, or a different tomato sauce. And it's like, even just like pizzerias across the road will have a bit of an argy over margheritas.
Yeah, but and also because Italy is also where pizza is from and where it's famous for. So it's not like you go to New York, where like the big thing in New York, the big trend was the dollar slice of pizza.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing, there's actually a documentary about the whole dollar slice of pizza on somewhere years ago, and like a big controversy, because now they might have to raise it to $1.50 just because rents and wages and other stuff, they can't, even though they're pumping out pizzas like nobody's business, they can't make enough money if they don't raise the price, because it's been like a dollar slice for 20 odd years or whatever. They're not like, it's got to, but then are people going to stop coming in, you know, and going to open the door down for $2 pizza? And there's a whole ridiculous conversation on the surface of it.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up was because they're not doing proper Italian pizza, because they're churning it out so quick. The dough is not rested. The dough is not treated properly. It's a very quick dough. It's a very quick sauce. It's just because it's a dollar a slice. Like, what do you want? You want, like, you're walking around New York, you want something in your belly because you're hungry.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, here we go. Do you know the name that the person who created the first ever Neapolitan pizza in the 19th century? Do you know who it was?
Claudio Neapolitano.
No, not even close. His name was Jerry Murphy from Killarney.
What?
Rafael Esposito was the name. Oh. 19th century Neapolitan, credited with inventing Italy's most famous type of pizza. Maybe turning in his grave. Rome has new vending machines which slides out freshly cooked pizzas in just 3 minutes. Buyers using the Mr. Go pizza machine can choose from four different kinds of pizza, ranging from €4.50 to €6. The machine kneads and tops the dough, and customers can watch the pizza cook behind a small glass window. Reviews by customers on Thursday of the machine, one of the first in Rome, range from acceptable if you're in a hurry to outright horror. So it's obviously not like, you know, if the best review is acceptable if you're in a hurry.
Yeah.
You know, it's not great. But I do get why people are upset over there. It's like it's cheapening the cheapest of food even more. Do you know what I mean? It's like pizza is a cheap dish. Is a cheap food to produce, and now you're cheapening it even more.
Yeah.
Like there's like I remember working in a restaurant and we had a pizza oven, and no two pizza chefs could agree on how to make the correct pizza.
Oh,
so like some of them would use this type of flour for pizza, others would use that type of flour or a combination, and some would use a certain type of salt, and some would use no salt, and some would use a different type of oil, and you know some would argue that you know your toppings should be blanched before they go on the pizza, and some say they should go on raw onto the pizza. No two pizza chefs would be like, no, I agree with you on how to make a pizza. Everyone thought they made the best fucking pizza.
Well, this is the thing I was telling you about, like, it's just across the street.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, you have those exact points of view, to say, and they say, that's why art pizza is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and also, the description they make of the machine kneads and tops the dough. I mean, it's probably like a very rudimentary, like, there's no way there's like a tiny little Italian pizza chef in behind the window spinning it up in the air and everything. It's probably like the dough comes up and just gets slapped from both sides, and that's it needed.
Yeah, it's just this press goes back up. It's like
dollop sauce,
perfect.
And
yeah, and
put some shit onto it, and that's it.
But like, choice of toppings, or what's the crack?
It says that there's four pizzas on offer, so I'm imagining like it's pre-programmed things of maybe just your basic cheese, maybe a pepperoni and a vegetarian, or
mushroom.
You don't have to have or Hawaiian or something, right? So it's like there's four, which really annoy the fucking Italians.
Fuck yeah, I don't see Hawaiian on that list.
instant Hawaiian pizza.
It's like you see all the just looking at it being made and just smashing the machine. Pink pineapple.
The man from Del Monte, he say, oh no. So tradition holds that Esposito created the classic Pizza Margherita on June 11th, 1889 to honour the Queen Consort Margherita of Savoy during her visit to Naples with Queen Umberto the First. There's a lot of words you never heard before in your life.
I'm loving the sun coming across the when you step into it and step out of it.
Oh yeah, like that?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, very dynamic.
Yeah, it's a blinding the shit out of me. Okay. He used tomatoes, mozzarella and basil leaves to represent the colours of the flag of a just united Italy, red, white and green. A plaque is affixed to a wall in Naples saying Pizza Margherita was born here. So I would imagine it's akin to, you know, somebody coming up with on-the-spot distilled whiskey and putting the vending machine outside the Jameson distillery. Do you know what I mean? I imagine it's something like that.
It's like a tap. Oh, God, it's bubbly.
It's just like wine lovers when they go into, say, a gastro pub, where they sell more wine than a bar, but not as much wine as a restaurant, so they've got wine on tap. Right? So it's like, the wine's not bad, but also, that's the way you serve beer. So is it really that good? And also, you only just have a choice of red or white. You know,
yeah. And so you go rosé, like, he's like, well, that's a squirt of red and a squirt of white. It's like, what do you mean a squirt? It's like, it's in this thing. You have Coca-Cola beside it. It's like, I'm not on a boat.
There's a technical term, a squirt.
Large squirt? Excuse me?
So here's some of the reviews. A Naples native and university student in Rome gave the machine-made pizza a try and gave it a thumbs down, saying it tasted more like Piadina, which is soft, ultra thin, unleavened bread wrap. So like a just like a pita, I suppose, or something like that. It's okay, but it's not pizza, she said. Gina, a pensioner who declined to give her surname, rejected the concept outright. Terrible. pizza really needs to be eaten hot immediately. This just doesn't work for me. I mean, you got to let it cool for a minute, or you're going to burn the fucking mouth off yourself with that cheese, man.
But it sounds like it's coming out lukewarm.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd have to, because the way they're microwaving that pizza, there's no way that, you know, you got to let all that shit stand for a minute.
Yeah.
And it's probably not microwave. Like, there's a piece of equipment I'd know is called as a Merry Chef. It's basically what they put your sandwich into in a Subway to toast it.
Oh, the kind of treadmill toaster thingy.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, maybe one of them, or maybe it's just like blasted with heat, like an air fryer. Just yeah. Like really, like intensely blasted with heat for like a couple of minutes. I mean, don't do it in Italy. These are the kinds of things that you want to be putting in London and Dublin and, you know, other cities where tourists are just going, oh, look, a cheap bite to eat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, one of the most expensive things for any tourist is eating. Because no matter where you go, it's expensive. Because if you're a tourist, you're in the tourist places.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, even if you go to, like, one of the chain places, it's still twice the price it probably is at home. So it's like, if you're out and about and you're doing your sightseeing and you're hiking and you see a vending machine, you go, €6 for a pizza? Well, I'll have one of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But don't do it in Italy where they invented pizza. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you.
But yeah, that's the story of pizza. Anyway, 132 years ago is when pizza was invented for the first time.
Sweet.
Interestingly enough, my great-great-great-great-grandfather came up with the idea of pizza long before its conception. So kind of runs in the family, this having great ideas thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. What was his thinking behind it? Why? What made him think of it?
He wanted to make a toasted cheese sandwich, but like an open-faced one. So he was like, man, I don't want a whole one. If only I had a pizza one.
Oh, fucking hell.
And the rest is history. I just saw it on the spot. I didn't even have that made
No,
up.
I can tell by the volume. I just want a pizza one. Yes, yes. It's like I'm unsure of the punchline.
next story. So, you know Chernobyl?
Yes.
The place and the accident and the nuclear and all the evacuation and the death.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say there's Rage of Death and the TV show, of course. Classic.
and of course, yeah, the limited series drama. Well, I didn't know that they were making fucking alcohol from the fucking apples that are still fucking growing in nuclear fucking Chernobyl.
Fuck, neither did I.
There you go. Told you didn't know about it.
Fuck.
So, here's the story. I'll just give you the story, okay?
Yes.
And we can learn about this together, all right?
Okay.
The first bottles of an artisanal spirit made using apples grown near the Chernobyl nuclear power plant have been seized by Ukrainian authorities. Now, why do you think they were seized by Ukrainian authorities? And I'll do a bit of a QI on this and make a big noise if you give me the obvious answer.
I don't know, because now I'm thinking of a million answers. they seized it for free booze?
No.
Poisoned the Russians?
Nope. It's actually got nothing to do with Chernobyl or nuclear or danger or anything like that.
I don't know.
Okay, here we go. Let's read on. But it's nothing to do with the fact. First of all, I thought it was going to be stopped by the Ukrainian authorities because this was an illegal spirit that couldn't be made because of, you know,
Chernobyl.
Death and radiation.
Yeah.
And Chernobyl. You know. Also, fair play to whatever PR company is taking this on.
Yeah, what's the name of the alcohol?
We'll get to that now in a second.
Okay.
So, the Chernobyl Spirit Company, it's a company, said that 1,500 bottles of atomic, with a K, alcohol drink were confiscated on the 19th of March and taken to the prosecutor's office. Officers took the shipment from a truck at a distillery in the Carpathians.
Carpathians?
Carpathians. The Spirit, its producers say, is Chernobyl's first consumer product since the 1986 nuclear disaster. That's 35 years ago, is Chernobyl's meltdown.
Yeah.
35 years.
But the,
however, just... that's still not why it was seized. They are now awaiting the outcome of an investigation by the Ukrainian security services, but say they have no idea why the shipment, which was destined for the UK, was seized. However, it seems that they are accusing us of using forged Ukrainian excise stamps.
Oh, that's
customs.
Reason.
Customs and bureaucracy is the reason.
Not, where is this made of? You know Chernobyl, yeah. An orchard right beside it. What? I don't think that's a good idea. It's selling.
I'm sure by the whole, distillation process that it's not, I wouldn't say it's an issue or, you know, maybe they wouldn't be allowed to produce it. I know the ins and outs of it, to be quite honest with you.
I don't think I'd call it atomic, though.
You'd have to. Well, what else would you call it?
Like, I think
having heard atomic and it's with a K, I'm thinking there's no better name for it.
Atomic, what is it, atomic cider?
It's just atomic apple spirit. But my thinking, like, obviously it's not dangerous to drink or that we know of. You know, I don't think as many scientists are going to examine the atomic apple spirit. They probably fucking should.
Yeah.
Now I've said it, it'll happen. So. I'm hanging on to it.
Yeah.
But I'd be more worried about the people going to harvest these apples in an area of land that's not supposed to be habitable for the next 10,000 years or some crazy shit like that.
Maybe it's always like those poor bastards who are like, can you find work? No, I can't. I'm struggling here. I have a job for you. Do you have a lead suit? What? No. Ah, you're fine. I want you to run down there, get as many apples as you can, and if something falls off, come home. You mean like if apples fall off? No. I mean like your dick or your little finger.
Well, I have a picture here of the label of Atomic Apple Spirit.
Yeah.
Shall we see what I can read? It's kind of hard. I'll see what I can read. Okay, here we go. Atomic is a high-quality spirit drink like those traditionally made in Ukrainian villages for many centuries, in brackets, as moonshine. So it's an illegal spirit, like poutine, I suppose.
Yeah.
The small batch distillate is made from apples grown in regions and many areas now safe to consume. So they're now safe to consume. According to a label on an alcohol bottle, safe to consume.
I know. This is safe to consume. Oh, it contains no poison. Well, it's alcohol, like.
Yeah. But distillation process makes radioactivity even further to almost undetectable levels. See, it's when they say almost undetectable levels.
It's when you get that Geiger counter and it clicks beside your beer and you go, is my beer radioactive? It is, yeah. I'm good, thanks.
Yeah,
don't want it.
I'm all right. I'll have that horrible fucking German liqueur with the pieces of gold in it, please. Can I have that one instead? Thanks very much.
Yeah. Instead of
this thing with DNA altering radiation.
Yeah. Do you want an Appletini? Not really. Where's it from? Ukraine? No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I'm good.
75% of the profits from Atomic will go on to supporting local communities and wildlife conservation in Chernobyl areas affected of the Ukraine. Look, the English is terrible. It's not their first language. You know, basically what they're saying is 75% of the profits is going to support communities and wildlife still in and around Chernobyl.
Good. Because the wildlife there, I'm sure, like, you know, the three-headed donkey, you know.
Oh, can you imagine a three-headed donkey? A trunky? My brain is going at infinite monkeys, Adam. You can't be throwing this stuff at me.
I just love that it was there. That word has been sitting in your brain going, it's a thronky. That what you're describing is a thronky. What? No one's ever said a three-headed donkey before. I know. but I know what it's called. It's a thronky. I've unlocked the answers to the universe.
Oh, man, it's not easy being green. Right. Last story. I don't know if anyone should be... This is still the same story, by the way. I don't know if we should be consuming anything about, like, from Chernobyl. Like, my brother was born in 87. So... when he was born, he had like cysts, and he had like, and he didn't come out like a monster, but he had like cysts, and he had like three different cysts, and one of them was on his eyebrow,
right?
Was on his brow bone, and he had to go that taken, and he had like an extra bone in his arm, and it's like there was loads of this stuff, like, you know, there was like minor deformities in people, like after Chernobyl, and that was just like from the fallout, and we were like, how many hundreds or thousands of miles away from Chernobyl, but like we're still affecting here. And like they had to like take crops out because they were afraid of the fallout and what way the wind was going to go. And yet here we are, only 35 years later. So there's still 9,965 years before we're allowed back onto the land. But we're like, it's all right, we can make some fucking moonshine out of it.
I think alcohol, huh? The cause and answer to all of life's problems.
Nature finds a way.
Yeah. Can we eat? No. Can we grow with it? No. Can we live? No. That we can do, though. Do you want a drink? I'd love a drink, yeah. I know where there's great apples. Appletini? Cheers, man.
anyone who listens to this who's not making appletinis, I'm calling them atomic teenies. No, hang on a minute. I can do better than this. I just come up with Tronky.
Atomatinis?
Atomatinis?
Would it be atomatinis?
Anyway, should we make an appletinis out of atomic apple? Spirit stuff. I don't think we should be, you know, like it's the almost undetectable levels that in 20 years time you'd be like, man, whenever I sit down I'm slanted because one of my arse cheeks is bigger than the other. I wonder if that has anything to do with, you know, that almost undetectable level of appletini that I had.
Fuck, I tell you, I'm gonna be looking out for that on shelves, because if it makes it over to England, it's gonna make it over to Ireland.
Well, there was 1,500 bottles destined for the entire of the UK. So I would imagine that, like, you know, like a specialist importer probably had a big order and they were going to send like a bottle here and a bottle there. But I don't think it's going to be that widespread. Although it's made BBC News. That's where I got this story from.
Yeah, it'll find its way to Irish shores.
The social enterprise company that makes Atomic is run by scientists who work in the 4,000 square kilometre Chernobyl exclusion zone. They work in there. What are you doing working in there? Go get the apples and fuck off back out of it. That's like you're fucking living and working in there.
It's like, what do you do? Well, I'm trying to figure out ways of, you know, irrigating the land, getting it back to, you know, livable conditions and promote farmland and any other side projects. Appletini? Excellent. Yeah. Where's this from? Orchard. Just in the back there.
So, yeah, their studies have included growing experimental crops to find out if grain and other food grown in the zone could be used to make products that are now safe to consume. Part of the reason for producing the spirit was to demonstrate how land around the exclusion zone could be put back to productive use. The researchers say this could allow communities to grow and sell produce, something that is currently illegal. Illegal.
That's a sick bird.
Something that's currently illegal on officially contaminated land. When we tasted the first atomic vodka martini in 2019, Professor Smith, sure that's his name, who was based in Portsmouth University, explained that it was no more radioactive than any other vodka, which means that every vodka is radioactive because the label says nearly undetectable.
Well, I suppose like all the good vodka comes from Russia, so yeah. It doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
Yeah. Look.
In Soviet Russia, vodka drink you. Like, jeez, my insides are burning.
All I'm going to say to people is, consider the source of my concern, right, which is me. If I'm concerned that something isn't good for you, it's probably not a good idea. Not because I'm a great health professional, but because I put some weird shit into my body. I'm not particularly picky about what goes into my body. But yeah, if I'm going, we should probably give this one a miss. You should probably give it a miss.
Yeah, a couple of minutes ago, if anyone's out there making an apple teeny, make it with Atomic and let us know what it tastes like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to try one. I probably would. I would. Why wouldn't you? I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. I don't know why I'm still talking about this story. Okay, hang on. Where's my other story? Sorry, one more story, which I found actually the other day. And myself and Fiona were talking about it. Okay. The man, first of all, question.
Yes.
Let's slow down for a second. Calm down. Relax. Do you know what a particle accelerator is?
A particle accelerator? Is it like the Hadron Collider?
Yeah. That's what I said as well. You know, other acceptable answer would have been an accelerator of particles.
That's the answer. That's the answer you give in English when you're like, you know what it says? What is a particle accelerator? It's an accelerator of particles.
Yeah.
What is it? I think you know, this is one of those trick questions where you know the answer's in the question. I have to describe it. Describe my balls.
Yeah.
Am I right?
With these nuts. So anyway, would you put your head inside one?
God, that's a real kind of, oh, don't touch the red button, but what's happening?
Well, here's the story about the man who did put his head inside a particle accelerator while it was switched on. So, this, now, just, I mean...
I wanted to go, Jesus, but, like, maybe nothing happened to him.
Here we go. Right. Now, I know that I've read this story. Right, and there's one particular fact which blows my mind, right? And we'll get on to that in a second. Okay, so here we go.
Where his watch was 2 minutes slower.
He says he invented recycling. Particle accelerators are machines that propel charged particles at incredible speeds, generally to collide with other particles. It's highly advisable that the high-speed particles collide with, should not be part of your head.
Noted. Go on.
As one man learned the hard way. On July 13, 1978, particle physicist Anatoly Burgosky was working his job at the U-70 synchrotron, the largest particle accelerator in the Soviet Union. We're back in Chernobyl territory.
Oh, yeah, we are.
The 36-year-old was inspecting a piece of equipment that had malfunctioned when the accident happened. Unbeknownst to him, several safety mechanisms had also failed, meaning that when he leaned over to get a good look at his task, the proton beam shot through the back of his head at close to the speed of light.
See, I think this is just ringing alarm bells that, you know, over that side of the world, Ukraine, Russia, and all that kind of stuff, maybe they shouldn't do, you know, chemical or, like, really big science experiments. Let them do, you know, the ear on the rat.
Or, and hear me out here.
Yes.
They have more people to throw at these kinds of experiments because they don't seem to value human life as much.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe they should be the ones to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Going to get, if it does go wrong, let the Russians get it. That's what our Russian listeners got.
There's just plenty more where that came from, I suppose. That's
a horrible way to think.
I know. But there you go. Or at least closer to the speed of light than you'd like a proton beam to be travelling when it goes straight through your face. Okay, so here's what happened. At first he felt no pain. He knew what had happened. He had seen a light brighter than 1,000 suns, as well as the gravity of the situation. At this point he didn't tell a soul and merely completed his day's work before heading home and waited for the inevitable to happen. So he already knew that he was in danger, but he didn't tell anybody. For fear of, like, being in danger with the Russians instead of with a particle beam.
Because he kind of went, what the fuck were you doing, sticking your head in it?
Yeah. So, a gray is the unit of radiation, right? That's how they measure radiation.
A gray.
Gray. G-R-A-Y.
Okay.
That's how I'm interpreting this. Absorbing 5 grays of radiation would usually lead to death, okay?
Yeah.
So all you need is 5 grays of radiation and you're dead.
Okay.
This guy had been hit with 3,000 of them.
Fuck. Jesus.
Yeah. in a single concentrated beam, he was hit with 3,000 grays of radiation. Within hours, his face began to swell beyond recognition, prompting him to visit the doctors the following morning. From there, he was taken to a clinic in Moscow, though largely it was so that his death could be observed rather than an attempt to save him.
Oh, God, that's fucking awful.
But it's because they knew they couldn't save him. It wasn't like they could, but they wanted to see what would happen, like they couldn't save him.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you'd induce a death, wouldn't you?
And death is inevitable. Why induce it?
Because what if it's fucking painful?
Obviously it's painful. He had a proton beam shot through his face.
Well, it's just, you go in with your fucking head undescribable and go, look, just give me some kind of needle that puts me asleep and I don't feel any pain. I'm just going to die. Don't wait to see how it fucking affects me.
But if they killed him early, then they wouldn't have known how it would affect him until death. They would have been like, look, I'm with the Russians on this one.
Fucking hell, that's awful.
Do you know what? I'm still with the Russians, even though I'm about to read this next sentence. The next few days saw his skin peel off around the entry and exit wounds, showing a clean path burned right through his skull, skin, and brain.
Wow.
So this just went, just like, right through him. There's a picture as well. And there's a scan. So it kind of goes in. It starts just behind his ear on his left-hand side.
Yeah.
And kind of comes out his nose. So it's kind of like whatever way he... And it's just... Anyway.
Fuck.
I'll put the picture up on the website. Remarkably, he did not die. There you go. Didn't die. So if we'd have just jumped the gun like you, you fucking Nazi, and killed him straight away, then we never would have known. You know.
But... No, I'm just like a fleshless blob.
No, not at all. He did not die. The brain tissue continued to burn away over the ensuing years, and his face became paralyzed on the left-hand side. He also lost his hearing on the left side. Weirder still, as he aged, the right side of his head showed signs of aging, but the left-hand side where the beam hit did not. Over the next few decades, he experienced seizures but remained functional, continued his work as a physicist, and completed a PhD. So a blob he was not.
Fucking hell. That is mental. I'm really intrigued about the non-aging side.
Yeah.
I bet everyone kind of went, sorry, what? Yeah, he's still, whatever age he was, he's still like 52 on one side, but he's 86 on the other.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
That's now people are going to hop on that and kind of going, do you want gold? Not really. I'm going to blast you with just enough radiation.
Yeah. The narrow focus of the beam that would cause massive damage likely kept the damage limited to an area of brain that he could live without. For the decade after his accident, he was unable to tell anyone about it, giving the notorious secrecy of the Soviet Union. He survived well beyond the end of the USSR, however. In fact, the man who put his head in a particle accelerator had lived and lived to tell the tale is still alive today.
Well, that is incredible.
And he wouldn't have been if you were in charge.
Well, I'm...
That's all I'm taking away from the story.
And I'm saying, if it had happened to me, I probably would have went, needle, please.
Yeah, but you would have gone on to finish a PhD and still be a physicist and still be alive today.
God. Frightening.
The thing that struck me is that, like, we all know of the character of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
And Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
Who was struck by more gamma rays than a human body could take and it should have killed him.
Yeah.
He became the Incredible Hulk. This guy, nothing. There's a hole in his head. But he looks a bit young on the left side. That's his superpower. I think he was fucking ripped off, man.
I think he did pretty fucking well, in fairness.
I know, but I'd still be like, because after a while, the novelty of life wears off. You know, how's that for an existential thought, right? But like, after a while, the novelty of life wears off. You're like, yeah, I'm alive and everything else, but man, I could really do some superpowers. You know, because every comic book hero is like, you know, they had an accident or they were bitten by, you know, electricity or radiation or nuclear or toxic and nothing.
Right.
It looks like he used a bit of oily Ulay on the left hand side of his face.
A bit of U45.
Yeah. I'd be very upset if it was me, that's all I'm saying. You know, because like, if you're going to get hit by a particle thing and be hit by that much radiation, then you'd be like, oh, why do I not have superpowers?
Just because your head's the size of a melon and you're all going through your fucking brain. You're lucky to be alive. Can I fly? I don't think so, son.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be alive. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. But I'd be even luckier if I, you know, could go invisible whenever I wanted.
I think if you could go invisible, it would only be like a certain part of you. Or if you could fly, you'd probably just fly into mirrors thinking you're like some kind of pigeon or budgie.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe it's not a hole through his head. Maybe the beam just made that part of his head invisible. He was hit with an invisible ray. And he doesn't look younger on the left-hand side. His wrinkles are just invisible.
Okay. Okay, yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah. 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 That's all my stories. What have you got?
A new book looks into transplanting human heads. Does consciousness follow?
Well, yeah. Because your consciousness doesn't come from your fucking elbows, does it? So it's like, if you're transplanting the head, you're taking everything that's in the head, which is the brain, which is your mind, which is your consciousness.
So what's muscle memory?
That's when muscles remember shit. I'm not a full-time muscleologist, as we all know.
No. I'm going to read. The idea of a head transplant seems bonkers enough, but if you've ever given more than 2 minutes of idle thought to the idea, you've probably found yourself asking one key question: would the consciousness of the original person also move across with it? Fortunately, for those of us pondering this sort of thing, there's a new book that looks at the concept. Mr. Humble and Dr. Butcher... Oh, that's bad... is the work of author Brandy Shellack, who was passed a blood-flecked notepad that once belonged to a scientist and Dr. Robert White. White was a neurosurgeon. I think that's your expertise.
Yes.
Who had spent decades performing head transplant procedures on monkeys in the hope of determining whether it could be done for humans. Shellack, I think I'm saying the name right, says there's no doubt whether it's possible to do an operation, implying that it's not a question of whether it can be done, but whether it should be done. White died in 2010 before ever completing the surgery on a human. His work was inspired by his belief that the brain is you, and by giving the brain a new body, it means the consciousness is saved.
Mm-hmm.
But sadly for the monkeys involved, and to the anger of animal rights groups, the transplants that were carried out saw the new bodies unable to move. While the heads regained some blood circulation, the spinal cord had been severed, meaning no movement could happen within the body. It's reported that hundreds of monkeys died during his experimentation. It goes on.
Okay. Yeah. It's the spinal cord. Like they can't figure out the spinal cord shit.
It's too much. There's too much going on.
I think that's where one of the areas of stem cell research is going into, is that if they can regenerate dead spinal cord cells, then maybe that heals it that way, because stem cells are doing some crazy fucking shit.
Yeah. But
they're not there yet, you know. As regards to the consciousness thing, I don't think I'd see it as a head transplant. I'd see it as a body transplant. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like,
I see what you mean, yeah. The head is the brain, the engine, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just, everything else is just another part to be replaced.
Everything else, it's just, you know, it's your transmission, it's your exhaust, it's your wheels. That's what's being transplanted. You know, yeah. you still need the bit on top. And the bit on top, you know, Futurama has taught us anything, can survive in a jar.
Fuck. Yeah.
You know, I don't see any jars around the place with bodies in them. You know.
Yeah.
Plus, I just thought, like, I understand the whole thing of consciousness and what is it to be aware of yourself and all that kind of shite.
Yeah.
But if you take the head off, that all goes away. You know what I mean? Like, you could probably strap electrodes to a headless body and get it to flail around the place. But I think if you... Because isn't there a thing on YouTube, it was like an experiment years ago, of the head where that they could reanimate with electricity and computer controls. So they weren't able to bring the consciousness back, but they were able to control mouth movements and eyes and that kind of thing through. I think I don't.
I'm sure there probably is, but I'm guessing all that proves is that our movements and our muscles are electrical signals from the brain, so you connect to certain parts of the brain that move the eyes.
And you, but then,
if
your brain activity is just neurons firing and brain electricity and all that kind of stuff, like if you reintroduce electricity to the brain, then surely that would just fire back up the neurons that formed your consciousness.
See, there's connections between the spinal cord. There's a thing at the back of your brain, I can't remember what it's called, and then the rest of it. Because there's lots of things that you do automatically, like blinking.
Yeah.
Those things are kind of... They just happen automatically. Whereas if I'm picking up a pen, my brain sees the pen, it kind of measures the distance, all that kind of stuff, and it measures how much force I need from my hand. I'm not just going to punch the thing and go, bah, pen!
Yeah.
So, but it's figuring out how the brain works that. So there's a part of your brain that just figures out the actual... It's connected to the actual movement and the muscles. But the actual thought process, like, thinking like to smile. You can move the muscles to smile and just go, ding. But it's the thought process of when you see something that's funny, or the reaction, what are the meshes between seeing the funny thing that enforces your body to, like, smile and then laugh?
I understand all that, but you can also have consciousness without reaction. So you can be... Say, for example, you hear stories of people who are on the operating table, but suddenly they can hear what's going on around them.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're conscious, but you can do fuck all about it. So if the neurons in the brain are firing because they have your decapitated head wired up to the fucking iMac in the corner, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, but the neurons are firing. So if that's what gives you consciousness, maybe that's what's firing up and not your reactionary senses. So you can be like, your consciousness is brought back to life. So you're like, you're in your brain, you're going, man, what the fuck just happened? Or what is happening? Or what's going on? And then they power it down and then you're gone again.
I think, because you're kind of saying the same thing as me, is there's two separate rooms.
Yeah.
One is the brain telling the body what to do. Mm-hmm. And then in the other room is the actual consciousness of the thought process behind the movement. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that room is pretty much always locked.
Yeah.
To the individual. You can't just access it from just a computer hooking up to it.
Yeah. 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 I get you. I'm not a full time brainologist, as we know.
Well, we just read that the word is neurosurgeon.
Just told you it wasn't a full time one. Fucking draw more attention to it. I'm trying to have a bit of tact about my situation here, Adam. Was sitting there calling me dumb shit.
<That's> rude. I'll move on.
Yeah.
A TikToker.
Yeah.
Okay, shares proof of time travel using historic events as examples. So, of course, a learned person, obviously. You know, not someone looking for clickbait.
Sorry, Adam, it's pronounced learned.
Learned. Sorry, I just heard it in my head.
A teached person.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah.
So a TikToker has posted a series of videos detailing moments in history that he believes must have been impacted somehow by time travelers. So I'm guessing a lot of this you're going to go, yep, absolutely. That was
ready
me.
To agree with everything he says.
Yeah. Pinch of salt required, naturally. Much the same as I'm talking to you. Santiago regularly posts about conspiracy theories and disturbing facts, and also has a 7-part series about history facts that make it seem like a time traveler was involved. Okay. These include the invention of the potato chip. Okay. In one video, Santiago explains there was a cook.
I love it already.
It was making French fried potatoes for a customer, and the customer kept sending them back, claiming they were too thick. So eventually, the frustrated cook peeled off thin slices of potato and fried those, apparently thinking, let's see him call these too thick. And it kind of took off from there. The customer sounds to me like someone who knows exactly what potato chips are and wants to enjoy his favorite snack, but he's having a bit of trouble getting the cook at the local restaurant to get them right. So he's saying that this guy had, like, you know, King Chris before. Yeah. Went back in time, said, I want thin slices of potato, please. And of course, yeah, the chef was just like getting his knife and just slicing them real thin. He's like, no, I want them, like, you know, thin. And just like slice them again. He's like, no, fucking paper thin and fucking find their way. What do you get this idea from? I'm a fucking time traveler, man. He's like, shut up.
Yeah.
So what about the bombing of Hamburg shipyard? Santiago says, that one story of the guy who experienced an air raid 11 years before it occurred. Journalist J. Bernard Hutton and photographer Joachim Brandt were sent by a German newspaper to do a story on the Hamburg shipyard in 1932. It was an uneventful visit until the bombs began raining down on them. Hutton and Brandt realized they were caught in the middle of an air raid and high-railed it out of there, but not before snapping some photographs. When they got back to the center of Hamburg, no one believed their story. They developed the photos they took, intending to prove to everyone that they weren't crazy. In fact, they proved the opposite. The photos showed no signs of an air raid.
Mm.
So that's interesting. Mm. 11 years later, Hutton was living in London when he opened up a newspaper and probably nearly spit his coffee across his desk. There was a story about Operation Gomorrah, an air raid on Hamburg. The accompanying photos looked exactly what he had experienced in 1932.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
It's just, I don't think we can say this guy didn't time travel.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, so far, it's up for, I mean, if somebody makes a claim like that, it's up to them to offer the evidence. Of which I think he's provided.
I can't look at the photos now.
Yeah.
Because I go, well, there was a bombing. Like, I don't know, you didn't go back and just do the pictures and like age them. Santiago also claims that the novelist Clive Cartmell may have been a time traveller, having written a 1944 book called Deadline, basically foreshadowing the development of the atomic bomb. In another video, he tells the story of a man named Andrew Carlson, who was reportedly arrested and investigated by the FBI after claiming to be a time traveller from 2026. He apparently made a huge wedge of cash after knowing which stocks to bid on, travelling back to 2003 to do precisely that, although the news was eventually disregarded and it has been shared by a satirical site. Santiago, however, reckons that there was evidence of missing money from the stock market at the time, in turn supposedly providing evidence of time travel. Pfft, bollocks. Another example Santiago has shared is that the pilgrims from the Mayflower being greeted by Native American Samoset. As the story goes, he spoke to them in English, not only saying welcome, but also asking for a beer. His knowledge of English thought to be a sign that time travel exists, despite the fact that some historians believe Native Americans may have learned languages from fishermen.
Now he's lost me.
Yeah. I think he's really picking at straws. He goes, no. When they arrived at the Mayflower, he went, oh, hello, Native, we come in peace. Right, you're very welcome. Beers for me and the old Apaches here? You're going to be dicks. No, come on.
No, you might as well say they turned up with a DVD that was subtitled.
Yeah, they came up with Last of the Mohicans. I went, look at that. That's maddening.
Yeah. They sent a tweet out saying they were on the way.
They were watching Star Wars. All right?
Oh, I mean, yeah, That's fantastic. But like in a way, you know, time travel is the best excuse, because it can't be called in to question because nobody can prove it. But like if you look at Back to the Future 2,
yes,
right, when Biff gets the sports book that predicts all the winners for the next 30 years or whatever,
yes,
he had that locked away in a safe. I don't know why, because if he'd have told anybody this book was printed in the future and I brought it back to myself, people would be like, all right, Biff, good man, you carry on. So like, and there was no way to prove, which is why it was the perfect crime, because they couldn't prove that he was like, you know, a gambling insider.
Yeah.
Because all he knew was the result. He didn't know anything about sport. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know why I bring it up.
Because it's just, like, the amount of plot holes you'll find in, although it's a very good for the old time traveling thing, there's plot holes there.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I just, you know, wish I could travel through time.
You are traveling through time.
No, I mean, like, I wish I had the ability to, at will, travel to different places in other times.
Oh, okay. Can't help you there.
I didn't think I was going to have to be that literal with you.
I'm just being a smart arse.
Oh, I do so many things if I could time travel. I'd probably travel through time if I could time travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine you'd probably fuck up my life. That's for fucking sure.
I definitely not do it on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can imagine.
In fairness, what could I do in time travel that would fuck up your life?
Have you seen The Butterfly Effect?
No.
Oh. Well, check it out. It's basically whatever action you do has consequences throughout time. So this guy is able to, he reads his diary and he gets to like the blackout sections.
Yeah.
He can go back to that time and be like the age he was, but then change what happened. So like all these horrible kind of things happen, like what do you call them, like firecrackers, accident with firecrackers, other things as kids got older, like drug abuse and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, he goes back in time to try and stop that shit from happening. And but it just leads to, when he comes back, like after that episode is done, he comes back to the age he is now. But the repercussions of that happening, he finds like, oh, his friend is now in a mental institute and his other friend now has a drug habit. So he has to go back to when that turning point happened and sort that out. But he realizes that it's all his fault.
Okay, it's pretty heavy.
Like, it is.
Like, you see, in a way, maybe I'm already time traveling because of all the stuff I predicted.
Maybe when you go to sleep at night, you're actually time traveling. Yeah, just fucked your brain there. You want some good news?
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe you're unconsciously time traveling.
Man, stop it.
Man, you got to get some more edibles and think about that.
Oh, man, you're fucking hell. I want to take some edibles about an hour before next week's show. Come back with an answer to that.
When's the next full moon?
Oh, it's on the 29th of May. I told you this. Can't wait for the week up beforehand. And yeah, I've already had people say that I'll forget, or that I won't do it, I won't follow through on it. I have on the ground evidence this is a thing.
Fiona is on the ball. You're going to forget about that. I won't. You're just like Adam.
Yeah.
Here we go. Good news. Good times.
This is the part of the show where we talk about happy and chirpier stuff. There won't be stories about a pervert running around in a buff. So here's just a few things that we won't talk about in this segment. War and hunger, and the language won't be vulgar. Politics and naked chicks and men doing stuff with their dicks. So sit back, relax, and kick off your shoes. And for once, let's just have some good news.
I'll start off with some really good news. A friend of the show, and sometime guest on the show, Paddy, his wife gave birth to little baby Amy this morning.
Oh, that is fantastic. How is he doing?
Paddy's doing grand. you know. I was talking to him. He's in good spirits, you know. He's okay, you know, because he's the important one after all, you know. Little baby Amy, 10 fingers, 10 toes, everything's where it should be, everything is all as it should be, everything's fine. And yes, there you go. So that was some good news.
God, that is fantastic.
Yeah, so congratulations, Paddy and Nora and little baby Amy. Okay, so also, here's my story for good news. Free prescriptions are on the way for everybody in New Zealand. Is it New Zealand? No, it's not New Zealand. No, it's not. A place.
Oh, cool. I love that place.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just read the story. Okay. It's Australian. Australia.
Okay. My story is also based in Australia. But go on anyway.
Australian company Chemist Warehouse's arrival has shaken up the pharmacy sector, with free prescriptions and smaller retailers are starting to follow suit. So, the medical card system that we have here is that you give a contribution to your prescription.
Yes.
So it's €2 per prescription, regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
Whether it's generic or whether it's, you know, brand new, straight out of the market drugs, it's €2.
Yeah.
Per prescription. So the standard subsidy in Australia seems to be $5 per prescription. That's based on my understanding on this story here.
Okay.
This chain of pharmacies is covering that $5 cost.
Wow. Meaning
that people can now go in and just get their $5 prescription. Okay. Now, that's great news. I know why they're doing it, because, you know, I've got to turn good news cynical. You know, they're hoping that when you go in, you're still going to drop that $5 on something that they actually make a markup on.
Yeah.
You know, creates brand loyalty. Get what they're doing. It's a lost leader. But still, you know, I don't think anyone should have to pay for medication. I'm very kind of socialist like that. It's just like, you know, I think if somebody's sick, let's do what we can to make sure they're not sick.
Yeah.
And let's not base it on the fact of whether they can afford it or not. Let's just make this person better. Nobody wants to be sick. Nobody wants to have to go through hospitals and doctors. I'm sure there's some people who do.
Mormons.
Yes. No.
No.
What's the word? It's right there. It begins with N. Necrophiliacs.
No, I knew you were going to say that.
No.
Is it people who don't do doctors?
Hypochondriacs.
Oh, they do doctors all the time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, apart from those people.
Oh, okay.
Like regular people like me and you.
Uh-huh.
Or you. I'm a time traveling predicting genius.
You're not regular at all.
No, I'm not regular at all. Aside from like those people, like nobody wants to be going through chemists and doctors and blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, go in and be like, hey, I need this stuff, give it to me.
Yeah, I think if you visit the doctor,
yeah,
and if he's going to prescribe something, I think.
Because if you're not on a medical card system in Ireland, it can be very expensive to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, before, I used to go to the doctor and it used to be £50 for the doctor's visit. And then whatever price the fucking prescription was going to be on top of that, which could have been up to four times the price of the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, well, you know, can I afford to go to the doctor? You know, which is, and it has changed a lot. But the medical card system is now, you go in, your GP visit is covered. And all you got to do is give a €2 contribution towards your prescription.
Nice.
You know, so it's like, I don't abuse the system because it's there. But there is peace of mind there that if something happens, I'm taken care of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think we need more of that. Now, I know why the company's doing it, but I do think it's better to, you know, that people now have that option of not having to worry about, you know, I've got $5 left, you know, if I'm not working and I'm on lockdown or no job because of COVID, I've got $5 left, so now I don't have to choose between, you know, a meal and my medicine.
Yeah.
I think it
is perfect. Well, once again, we're back in Australia.
Yeah.
And more celebrity good news.
Well, you know, let's make sure the celebrities are okay.
Matt Damon donates $10,000 while attending domestic violence charity event in Brisbane.
Nice.
So Matt Damon isn't just soaking up the sights and sounds and smells while he's in Australia filming Thor, Love and Thunder. The Hollywood star has recently been very generous while attending a charity event for an Australian domestic violence organisation. He was one of the many people who rocked up in the Safe Haven event at the Khalil Hotel in Brisbane over the weekend. While having him there was an incredible moment for the charity, he also made a sizable $10,000 donation to help them with their vital grassroots campaign work. A woman who claimed to have been in attendance and is the daughter of a woman, is the daughter of the charity's founder, revealed in a Reddit post about the 50-year-old's generosity. The post added that Damon and his wife were generally interested in the issue of preventing domestic violence. And it goes on. So yeah, he's just doing this a little bit and went, do you know what? That's for you there.
And also, do you know what? It's very generous. Like, do you know what I hate seeing on the internet is when people make big donations like this, and there's always some fucking cunt on Twitter who go, "Oh, that, all the money you have, and that's what you give."
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't care who you are. 10 grand to a charity is 10 grand to a charity. Do you know what I mean? Anybody on Twitter going, or on social media, or anyone going, "Oh, is that all he gave? What should you give to charity?"
Yeah.
Have you done anything for charity ever? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't understand like the toxic thing around it. But how good must it, like, how good do you reckon it felt for Matt Damon to go, "Yeah, I'm going to write a check for 10 grand.
Yeah, I'd say he just went, when he, I'm sure he was hearing the stories and all that kind of stuff, and yeah. You know, being with the wife, he was thinking, I'm never going to hurt my wife, and yeah. These are awful stories.
Yeah, but I mean, it genuinely feels good to do something good for other people. So, like, for him, like, I don't mean like how good you think it felt to be like, "I've got an extra 10 grand to spare." What I mean is like, yeah. Like he had the means to be able to do that.
Yeah,
you know, like. The number of zeros on the check is nearly irrelevant. It's the fact that he was like, "No, do you know what? I can, so I'm going to."
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have to. He also could have just been like, "No, do you know what? I'm speaking free at a charity thing. I'm Matt Damon. What the fuck do you want from me?" He could have been like that, but he was like, no, here's a check.
Yeah.
Plus, it raised more awareness for it because we're talking about it and others are talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, good job.
Good job, Matt Damon.
Good job. Do you know what? He can butter my knuckle anytime.
What?
Where can people find us, Adam?
The best place to find us is at www.thenewsburp.com for all the links to our shows.
it's getting hard and harder to walk them in.
God, yeah. You'll also find links to our Table of Two, which Killian was talking about. Quick plug for Killian. You can catch him in Phantom of the Opera at the end of the summer in London. So if you're from London, or you're in England, or if you can travel, go check him out playing the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera.
I'm sorry to cut across you. He's playing Phantom. I'm playing the Opera.
Yeah.
Just wanted to let everybody know I'm in Phantom in the Opera as the Opera. He's my Phantom.
Phantom of the Opera starring Kenny Donnelly and Matt McGurk may not be present. At the bottom of the page,
I just want to hear the recorded message. Tonight's part of the Opera will no longer be played by Matt McGurk, but will instead be played by Phil Jupitus.
The part of the Opera will not be featured, as it never was. At the bottom of the page, you'll find links to our PayPal if you want to throw us a bit of money. If you enjoyed the show, you can just throw us a once-off PayPal thing. We're still on TeePublic?
Yeah.
This is that you made a note of it last week. I got to fix that. So
I've got to make another note.
If you want to hop on there, you'll find our cartoon faces slapped across a whole lot of merch. And then, of course, there's our Patreon section, www.patreon.com/newsburp, where you'll get extra stuff for bits and monies to keep us going. You will get the show a day free, ad-free versions of the show, videos of the show, videos of the Patreon bit. And the Patreon bit itself is Top 5 and Florida Mans. And we also give shout-outs to all the patrons. Shout-outs go to?
Kevin Fagan, Aaron Eldred, Fiona Cleary, Nathan Peterson, Paul Blunson, Sean Ryan, Alexander Henry, Sarah Beck, and Mason Sloan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all so much for your support. We really, really do appreciate it. I've got nothing more. That's it.
Okay, that's good job. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. I feel like we went on for a while. Did we go on for a while?
An hour 20. I mean, like, we usually like an hour, maybe 10, 15.
Yeah. So, we can just kind of chop a bit off the end of this and then not bother with the Patreon.
What, just me going, this is guys, we've never done this for a time. I was like, no.
Hang on, are we still recording?
Yeah, I'm going to stop now. Okay, so say goodbye, Matt.
Goodbye, Matt.
Bye.